Okie dokie. Hello, everyone. How's it going? Azrin, the language nerd here, as always. If you're listening on the podcast, of course, that is, as always. If you're listening somewhere else, then hello, I'm Azrin, the language nerd. And today I'm with.
Inês.
Hello. So this is fun. I've been doing more of these where I connect with different people that make content about language learning, and we talk about some of our favorite language learning methods and strategies. I thought today, some of you may know who I am, but you don't know who Ines is. Some people may know who Ines is, but don't know who I am. So I thought we can maybe start things off by giving a short introduction of who we are. So, Ines, why don't you start us off?
So my name is Inês. I come from Portugal. I'm very passionate for language learning, and I've been accumulating some languages throughout my life, even though I don't speak them. I don't speak all of them that fluently, or indeed, I don't think I speak most of them that fluently. But still, I want to keep this passion, I guess, for the rest of my life. Although I've studied like languages at the university, and that was my first degree, after that I decided to go to the tourism field, and now I teach tourism in the tourism field at a university in Portugal. And right now I'm doing research on traveling to learn languages. So I've found a way to match my passion to my work, and that's a lot of fun.
Very, very cool. And then myself, so my name's Azrin. Online, people call me Azrin the language nerd. I also like learning languages, of course. I speak five languages right now: English, French, Spanish, Mandarin, and Gujarati. For all five, I speak all of them quite well. English, French, and Spanish are my absolute strongest. And then Mandarin, Gujarati are quite strong, but I still have some work to do. I used to st I've actually I guess I am still studying languages at university. My first degree was a double major in French and Spanish. French and Spanish, it was a French and Spanish language and literature degree. Right now I've gone back to school while I work full time, so I'm doing both at the same time. And I'm doing an East Asian language studies degree with a concentration in Mandarin. For work, I run what's called the Calgary Language Nerds. So my team and I, we teach a wide variety of foreign languages to people of all ages and all levels of fluency. And the biggest project that I'm working on right now is a free course on how to learn another language. It's a video-based course, completely free, that walks people through step by step by step from an absolute beginner level all the way to very advanced, how to learn basically any widely spoken language. So French, Spanish, Arabic, Mandarin, Japanese, German, Portuguese, English would work, assuming you have an intermediate level, because everything is taught in English in the course. So if you don't speak English, you'd have a difficult time understanding what I'm saying. But any widely spoken language, this course would work for. So that's the biggest project that I'm currently working on.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's good. It's taking a lot of time, but
Yeah.
so Ines, what is like your one or two favorite strategies when it comes to language learning for yourself?
It's okay. I'm gonna pick more than one. I think
Sure.
it's great to read in a language. I think it's great to listen to YouTube and podcasts because I have a very busy life, and listening, while I'm listening, I can do other stuff, and that's mostly how I learn languages during the week. I like making friends with people that live in my country, and then practicing the languages that I'm learning with these people. I think it's a lot of fun. Unfortunately, it doesn't work that well with COVID-19, but
Yeah,
before
no kidding.
the pandemic, it sure was a lot of fun. And I think writing is awesome because then I can think about the structures and the vocab and try to practice as much as I can, because I think that when we're speaking, we have to be more spontaneous. And so sometimes we don't really have the time to use all the words that we've been trying to acquire. So I think it's, I think writing can be really great. So this would be I think my main strategies, things that I really like doing, and I think that they make a difference. And you?
Well, right now, if you asked me, my favorite strategy, it's just right now because it's something I've only been doing recently, but I'm having so much fun with it. And so currently, this is what I my favorite. I've been taking private Japanese lessons once, not really super regularly, but I'm taking some classes. And all I do in my classes is I pretend to be a 2-year-old. So that must sound very strange to people, but what I mean is if you think about how 2-year-olds learn, or 1.5 to 2-year-olds, how they learn language, they basically start, they wander around the world, they point to things, they ask how, they look at you and they go, that. And they're asking you, what is that called? And then you tell them, oh, that's a box, that's a house, that's a car, that's a this, that's a that. And they try to communicate using broken language to put together sentences or words to communicate what they'd like to communicate to you. And that's all they do all day. And then the adults play with them at the same time. And so in my classes, I basically pretend to be a 2-year-old. So I point at different things. I ask how to say it. And then I will then try to form simple sentences with whatever that object is. It's reasonably spontaneous, so it's not pre-planned. I don't take notes. And so last time, for example, I had an alligator in my hand, and the alligator for the bulk of the class was just eating different things around me. That was the bulk of my class. I would take my toy alligator that my cousin likes to play with, because I have a 2-year-old cousin. He that's where this I call the strategy the Jevin strategy, by the way. My little cousin's name is Jevin. And so I'm like, okay, I'm gonna name it after him. So it's the Jevin strategy. So Jevin plays with this like little alligator toy. So I grab the alligator. Alligator is wani in Japanese.
Oh, I
So
didn't know
now you
that.
know. I have 3 alligators, and now I can count to 3 because I call them wani itsu, wani ni, wani san. So what, like that's I remember the numbers now too. And then like his mouth opens up. So I'd stick like stuff in his mouth. And I'd be like, oh, the wani's eating this, wani's eating, and it was really silly. I was highly entertained.
It's fun. And I think that what you said is very important. I think that many people are expecting to reach a stage when they're going to speak perfectly in order to start speaking. They want to speak only then when they can already speak the language perfectly or almost perfectly. But we really have to take baby steps and I actually not be afraid. And when we are not afraid of learning the language and of saying mistakes, we end up developing a lot more because we take risks. And I think it's great if you have someone with the patience to correct you and to tell you how to improve your sentence structure and so on. But it's really good, like, to have this to take these risks and to just try to mix the words and try to make it work. And eventually it's going to improve. I think it's something that I learned with age. That I didn't do for my first language, which was English, and I was always very afraid of saying anything wrong. But I think that as time went by and I started also using the languages that I learned in a real context, I ended up realizing that, I mean, I want to communicate. It doesn't have to be perfect, and it's going to improve over time if I pay attention to where I can improve, I guess.
So what do you think? I'm curious about this. What do you think about people who say that you, how do I say this? There are certain people that I've come across that focus heavily on input early on. So they do lots of listening and reading, and they don't worry about speaking. They do speaking much later. And they're like, ah, let me just do listening and reading in the beginning, and later I'll start to speak. What do you think of that?
I think it's good. I do that, but I also maybe in the first months I won't bother that much with speaking. But I mean, after 3 months, my Japanese or Chinese or whatever, it's still pretty much broken. It's not good. So I'm still struggling a lot. Now I know more words, but I tend to wait a little bit more until I can have some more vocabulary or structures to try to use. But I think that it's also fine if you want to start from the beginning. It's just that okay, private, you have to pay for private lessons. Yeah, so I think that it's more productive after this super beginners, this absolute beginner stage to start the lessons afterwards. But I think maybe some people are more comfortable with starting the lessons right away.
Do you think someone needs private lessons to learn a language?
I think it's useful. I don't think it's Absolutely essential. Well, I've learned some of the. I haven't taken classes for all my languages like Swedish and Italian. I've never taken. No, actually, Swedish. I did take some lessons, but not private ones. But like for Italian, I wouldn't say I speak it very well, but maybe B2 level, so I can read anything in Italian. Not understand it 100%, but I think it's possible to learn without these private lessons, but I think private lessons are good to get these corrections. I really like to speak and to have someone telling me where I can improve and to correct my word use and my structures. Because when you're speaking to native speakers, it's a lot of fun and it's also important. But I think that your friends, they probably if they understand you, they're not going to correct you. So you're going to be repeating the same mistakes over and over again. Mm-hmm. Until one day after several months, someone tells you, hey, that's not how you use this word. That's not how you conjugate this verb. And then, it takes just, I think it's the teachers are good for this. I think it's helpful.
Yeah, and to layer on that, for me, I always need one or multiple people that teach me a language in a private fashion, but it doesn't have to be a private tutor. Like it can be, and I often will pay for a tutor, but it doesn't have to be. So for example, I remember last year, maybe 2 years ago, actually, I met a few people in my city that were native Mandarin speakers. They used to come to my drop-in Mandarin class, actually, to help out. And there are a few of them that I became pretty good friends with. And I would hang out with them frequently, pretty like once a week, once every 2 weeks. Like that's quite a bit, I think. And not just for an hour, like we'd go do stuff and we'd really hang out and we would just talk in Mandarin. And they would be kind of like my teachers in a way. One of them in particular, I would say. One of them in particular. And so I would ask, like we'd talk about stuff and then ask, like, oh, how do I say something like this? And her English was quite strong, reasonably strong. Really strong, actually. So she would often know how to like translate things and help me. So she almost was like a teacher for a whole year because she was here in Canada for a year. And so for a whole year, she was kind of like my teacher. Then I had another friend who was also a teacher, but in a very different way. For her, just the way she spoke, I understood half of what she said. Like 50% of the words that came out of her mouth, I did not understand. And I was like, what the heck? And most people in Mandarin, when they talk, I understand most of what they say. So she was like, she kept just the way she talked and her communication style was such that I didn't understand most of what she said. So we would hang out and her English, she spoke English well, but she didn't have confidence in her English. So she spoke only in Mandarin because she wasn't confident. So for her, that she was like my vocabulary coach because I would learn so much new vocabulary when I hung out with her. So I think for me, like,
Yeah,
I think those one-on-one relationships is important for to have that one-on-one tutor, but it doesn't always have to be a tutor that you've paid for, although I have done that, of course, as well, as I'm doing right now for Japanese.
It also depends on what kind of friends you're talking about, because some people are always going to ignore your mistakes and never say, I mean, they are not going to try to correct you or even to teach you words. Well, it depends. I've had like for Italian, I had a few friends that they were really nice. They were always teaching me new words and also correcting my mistakes. There was a particular word, which was the word tree. It was terrible. I was always saying this word in another language instead of Italian. So they were always reminding me, oh, that's not how you say tree in Italian. I think also having these friends outside of a lesson context, it's more natural that you end up speaking about other topics than with a teacher, because mm-hmm. in a teacher you're always probably going to be speaking about certain topics, whereas if you're with a friend, you're hanging out outside, you are in the world outside of a classroom or being in front of a computer. So you end up having more objects to look at, to point at, more conversation. The conversation flows to other directions. I think it's cool. I think it's good to have someone that corrects you. You might pay for these or not, but I think it makes a difference to have someone correcting whatever you, especially yep. in writing. I really like to have some feedback in terms of my writing, because that's where I can absorb the structures more easily.
Yeah, you said a few things that are interesting. The first one is writing. So I agree, when it comes to improving writing, I haven't found another way to really drastically improve your writing than to work with someone who's strong at writing and can also help you with writing. Some people are good at writing, but they can't help you with it. They don't know how to explain it. So to find someone that has both, they can help you with it and they're good at it themselves. I haven't seen a way to improve writing apart from that. The second thing you said, which is interesting, is about being corrected in terms of like speaking and how you use the language when you're communicating in an oral fashion. You made me think of something that one thing I think a lot of language learners don't do enough of is they don't ask, whether it's a tutor or a friend or a casual language partner, whoever it is, they don't ask often enough if they said something correctly or incorrectly. Because I think that can, how do I say this? It takes some of the responsibility off the teacher, and they should probably correct you, but it takes some onto yourself, because maybe the teacher doesn't want, they feel bad correcting you, or they don't even notice you made mistakes or whatever, because that's hard. Me as a native speaker of English, if I understood what you said, unless I was actually paying attention, I won't even notice you made a mistake. Like I won't that's even true. Notice because it's my first language. So I don't even think to listen for grammar. So I have to actually listen for mistakes.
Yeah.
Okay. So I always like that for, I'm a big fan of language learners asking, especially when you're with a native speaker, like, hey, should I say this? And then you say the sentence and they go, oh yeah, I understand you. No. But is that right? Like, can I actually say that? And then they'll be like, oh, actually, no. Well, you should probably say this. But you need to ask them. And initially, they might not even know. They might even be like, oh yeah, it's right. And you're like, it's right? Well, wait, what did you say again? And they'll ask you. Right? But I think asking for corrections is pretty important.
Yes. And also not being afraid of being corrected. I think it's super mm-hmm. normal. Just accepting that you're learning. I think it's good to have this kind of attitude. Yeah. What about like reading? Do you like reading in your target languages? Is it something that you do?
People ask me this a lot. I personally am not a big reader, but as in, how do I say this? I don't go out of my way to read, but I end up reading a fair amount. That's just what mm-hmm. happens. I don't actually go out of my way to do it, but it happens because a couple of reasons. I often take classes at a university or some sort of actual academic institution, and they make you read. There's no choice. Whether it's your did we freeze for a sec? There we okay. go. You're back. I was just saying yes. that I end up reading a fair amount because I take classes at like an academic institution or something like that. So they make you read, whether it's textbook audios, whether it's or textbook dialogues, whether it's they give you something to read, whether it's a book, whether it's a poem or whatever it is, they always give you stuff to read. So I end up reading quite a bit. Gujarati, for example. I've read quite a bit in Gujarati, but I haven't read books or texts. What I did is I just followed a whole bunch of Gujarati meme accounts and like joke mm-hmm. accounts where they just like post pictures of memes and everything in Gujarati. And initially I would just read one letter. So it'd take me like 8 minutes to read one letter because I'd be like, I can't read any. Okay, let me pick, what letters do I know? Do I know that one? I think that letter's ka. Oh no, it's not. That's fa. Oh, is that fa? I don't know. Let's not do that letter. Do I know that letter? I don't know that one. It would take me 8 minutes to read one letter, and I'd be so proud of myself, but also tired that it took me 8 minutes to read one letter that I would just move on. But I would do that as I scrolled Instagram. I'll just read one letter per meme I saw. Then slowly but surely I could read one word. Then I could read like a couple of words. And now I don't read super well in Gujarati per se, but now if you throw a website in front of me in Gujarati, I used to be like, oh my God, it's a website in Gujarati, close. And I'll just close it. I wouldn't even try to read it because it was so hard. But now I'll be like, oh, it's a website in Gujarati. Okay, yeah, I could probably figure this out. And I don't feel overwhelmed anymore. But I don't go out of my way to do a lot of reading. It just sort of happens by happenstance.
I think it's crucial. The crucial thing is to find a method that you like. finding something that you're passionate about, I guess. In my case, I really enjoy reading, and I have like a list of books, and I want to read books in all of my languages, also including my native language, because it always feels so easy when I'm reading in Portuguese. And so I read in 8 languages, and in these 8 languages, I can read books that are for native speakers. The only language where I can't really read books for native speakers is Mandarin. I still have to switch to the graded readers. And at this stage, they're fun. I found the collection that I really like, and a series that I really like. And like for Japanese, that's not it. I'm not quite there yet.
Well, Mandarin and Japanese are hard languages because you don't just have an alphabet. It's not just an alphabet. You have thousands of characters you have to know.
Yeah. I got 4 books in Mandarin when I went to Hong Kong, and I'm still struggling with the first one. I read the first 20 pages, and it was very hard. I can make it if I really had to. If someone pointed the gun to my head, I would be able to read the book. But I think I just want to improve a little bit, because it's too painful to check so many words in the dictionary so that I can move on with the book. So yeah, it's still too hard. But meanwhile, we have the graded readers.
Yeah. Well, why don't we start to wrap this up here? Any final thoughts you wanted to share?
Oh, I also think it's a lot of fun to use Netflix with double subtitles.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of fun to have like your target language and your native language or English, and then being able to compare. I think this is a great thing.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. Where can people find you online?
People can find me online on Instagram, I guess. That would be the best way. My Instagram is INES, so Ines. _WorldWideWeb, not word words language, not to the whole world.
So like Word Wide Web.
Exactly.
Oh, very cool. I like that. Nice. So then if you don't know where you can find me, probably the best actually right now would be azrenthelanguagenerd.com/free course. So that's AZREN thelanguagenerd.com/free course. That's probably the best place to check out what I'm up to nowadays, because that's where all my attention is going. So, okay, Ines, well, it's nice to speak with you as always, and I'll talk with you soon. It was nice
to speak to you, and I love the crocodile method. I'm going to try it next time I have a Japanese lesson.
Go for it. Okay, see you.
Bye-bye. Thank you.